Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Zenith Bank Full Year 2021 Conference Call. Throughout the call, all participants will be in listen-only mode, and afterwards there will be a question and answer session. Just to remind you, this conference call is being recorded. Today, I am pleased to present Mr. Ebenezer Onyango, the Group CEO. Sir, please go ahead with your meeting.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Ebenezer Onyango, the Group CEO and Managing Director of Zenith Bank PLC. It's our pleasure to be connected with you this afternoon to provide insights with respect to our audited financial results for 2021. Before we go on, I would like to introduce members of our team here. I have Dennis Onisa, an Executive Director. I have Tope Fashionti, he's an Executive Director. Henry Oro, an Executive Director. Felix Egbon, the General Manager and the Chief Risk Officer of the bank. We have Mukhtar Adam, the CFO of the bank, and I have Taye Ayedipo, the Investor Relations Manager of the bank. It's our pleasure to have you on this call. Before we go on, it's important for me to provide a bit of context with respect to the environment in which we operated in 2021. In terms of macro, we can see that the GDP improved relative to 2020, where we recorded an average of 3.4% against the contraction of the previous year of 1.92%. The implication of this for business is that we can see a gradual recovery from the COVID pandemic on the business activities, and this is coming largely on the back of the vaccine program and also the continuation of the various stimulus packages being implemented at the monetary and fiscal levels. Inflation for 2021 was also elevated when compared to 2020. Inflation, average inflation for 2021 stood at 16.98%, and this also has implication for incremental operating costs and also an erosion of the disposable income of the household and the average consumer in the market. Exchange rates remain moderately the same, moving from an average of the IRR rate, moving from an average of 400 naira to the dollar to about 410. The fact remains that foreign exchange challenges still persist in the economy. However, we've noticed a bit of moderation. In terms of turnover in the foreign exchange market, the levels of turnover remain practically the same when compared with 2021. Interest rates also has been very, very depressed, and this has also resulted in what we have a very depressed yield in government instrument. Because of this, we've seen yield on instruments and as well as loan pricing equally remaining very, very muted. We had to contend with this situation, this scenario, and that meant that in terms of interest income, one is not expected to have that reasonably elevated improvement. However, in terms of the industry per se, we've seen the central bank come out with the framework for the open banking system. This was launched in February 17, 2021, and Zenith has moved assiduously with this commencement of the framework to launch our open banking, and we're at the point of readiness where we are currently exchanging API and having connectivity with essentially the fintech companies. CBN in the course of the year also launched the digital currency, that's the eNaira, and it's indeed something to be proud about that we are the first country in Africa to launch eNaira. As at the month of October, there are about 700,000 downloads. The downloads are continuing, and we expect that in the coming period, we'll begin to see traction in terms of transaction flow on this platform. It's also expected that the launch of this eNaira will also signal the commencement of the use of the distributed ledger as we continue to operate our digital banking environment, the digital ledger, in terms of the blockchain technology that provides more discipline and control perspective with respect to ecosystem behavior. CBN also, in the course of the year, discontinued the allocation of foreign exchange to BDC, And BDCs, that role has now been shifted to banks. And banks have been able to bring in a lot of sanity and also control to checkmate spurious and arbitrage opportunities that persisted at the commencement of the scheme. Now we can say that effectively, with respect to the request for BTA and PTA in the market, what you see remains like what one can reasonably call the effective demand of PTA and BDC because of the inherent controls that have been built into the process to checkmate abuse. Then throughout the year, CBN policy rate remains the same. And what we've also seen is that because the policy rate remains the same, CBN has continued its own stimulus package and continued the intervention, the forbearance given for interest rate on intervention loan, which still remains at 5%. So all said, Zenith was able to achieve a double-digit growth in our gross earnings. And this is coming against the guidance of 5% that was communicated and advised to the market. We achieved a 10% year-on-year growth. PBT also recorded impressive growth, where we moved from 255 billion to 281 billion. This is also an improvement when compared to the guidance. It's a 10% year-on-year improvement against a guidance of 5.5%. This performance is coming largely on the back of the very remarkable and impressive growth we are recording on our digital and retail banking segment. Apart from that, across all business segments, we recorded growth as we've been able to win mandate, and we can also observe and see that our market share is steadily on the increase. However, on the cost side, we are still burdened with regulatory costs. In terms of our overheads, in general, the total overheads, regulatory costs account for a whopping 20%, 55 billion. This is a sunk cost which we'll continue to carry on since it's a regulatory-induced cost. The other aspect of our cost line is ICT costs. That also is expected because of the massive revamp and automation we are embracing in our system, in the entire process and development. So we'll develop a number of products, discover new business verticals, and also created new revenue pools. All these account for the improvement to see. I will invite our CFO, Mukhtar Adam, to provide a deeper insight with respect to the figures and the achievement for the year. Then we can go into your questions and answer. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you very much, MD CEO, for the introduction. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Mukhtar Adam. As we have shared with the market, our performance for financial year end 2021, we recorded very impressive growth in terms of our gross earnings, 10% increased by 69 billion year on year. And the growth in gross earnings is coming from a 2% growth in interest income and then 23% growth in non-interest income. So non-interest income grew by 57 billion within the financial year. Interest income, just 2%, but you can see that our loan book grew by 20%. The yield environment has been depressed, so rates are reasonably low. And then we also know that the forbearance that was given on intervention loans has been retained. Interest on treasury bills and other government instruments are still very low. Despite that, we have been able to grow interest income by 2%. Non-interest income was very, very strong. Our trading book did very, very well. Our treasury products did very, very well. And then our fees on electronic products was very, very strong that enabled us to grow non-interest income. The combination of these helped to grow the gross revenue by 10%. On the cost side, We have seen interest expense drop by 12% on the back of 21% growth in our total deposits. Our customer deposits increased by 21% from 5.3 trillion to 6.4 trillion. However, our interest expense reduced by 12%. 14 billion drop in interest expense. So that also demonstrates our ability to grow our savings account, our retail deposit related accounts, and other cheaper source of funding to be able to manage the low yield environment within the that interest in the environment. So if you go down, you would also see that our operating cost grew by 13%. But this has to be considered from the perspective of average of 15% inflation within the period. Then also, a lot of our costs, that are especially our IT-related costs, are dollar-denominated, and you see exchange rate has moved by about 5 to 6% within the period. Then regulatory cost, which is a function of our balance sheet, our total asset, also drove our operating expense. Without regulatory cost, our operating expense would have grown by 11%, which is reasonably consistent with the growth in our gross earnings. Then that helped us to sustain an EPS of 7.78 naira, a 6% growth. Then, one key factor that we have to look at is our impairment charge. Our impairment charge increased, but you have to also look at it from the fact that our loan book also grew within the period. So overall, from the P&L perspective, the performance, in my opinion, is very, very strong. All income lines, or most income lines, have grown. Significant cost lines have dropped. And then the bottom line has increased by 10% within the period. The balance sheet areas have also grown. 20% growth in the loan book, 21% growth in deposits. Shareholders' fund has also grown, signifying that Zenith Bank is still very, very strong, ready to take all other opportunities that are coming within 2022 financial year. So I would want to pause here to give participants opportunity to ask questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one on your telephone keypad displayed on the screen or on your device. If you wish to withdraw your question, you may do so by pressing star and then two to cancel. We will take a brief pause while the questions are registered. Thank you. The first question is from Tunde Okunleye of SBG Securities. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the conference call, and thank you for taking my question. I just have a few clarifying questions, and the first part is on your income line. I want to understand what was driving the 16.5% year-on-year growth in your interest on loans to customers. I would like to know the average rate on your loan book, and should we be expecting any repricing going forward? The next question is on what was responsible for the significant drop in your interest on placements with banks and discount houses. I would like to get some insight on that. And also in your trade, on your trading revenue, particularly on the gains or loss or on trading, we saw a gain of 42.4 billion coming from 18 billion in previous year. Just for maybe you could share more clarity on what is driving the gain, and also to find out if we expect that momentum going forward into 2022. The next question is on your tax expense. I noticed a 41.6% jump year on year, and I want to know what was responsible for that. And also, given the new capital tax gain following the expiry of tax exemption on government security, my understanding is that FGN bonds are tax exempted. So I would like to know what is split between your FGN and non-FGN securities. And also, if you could also shed more light on how this new capital gain is going to affect your investment guidelines. My next set of questions is on your asset quality. I know you've mentioned about the loan loss provision increasing 51.6%, but I noticed a significant jump on a quarter-on-quarter. Maybe you could shed more light on what is really driving the quarter-on-quarter increase, because it was up by 2x. And the next question is just to have a sense of what you think about the CBN 100-for-100 policy and also the extension of 5% on moratorium loans to 2023. So I would like to know like what you think about that, and also what percentage of your total loan book are intervention loans. The final question is on the Basel III framework, which I know is currently in progress. I would just like to have a sense of how you think this is going to impact your capital structure and dividend payments after it is fully implemented. I'll pause here for now and then probably come back for the next set of my questions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Tunde. May I invite the CFO to take the questions on the income lines, the interest on placement with banks, trading gains, tax expense, and implication of the new tax regime. Felix Egma will also take on the question on the Basel III framework, as well as the asset quality quarter-on-quarter movement. CFO, over to you.
Thank you very much. You're talking of the interest income on loans. Okay, so you realize that our interest income on loans and advances, if you go to page 142, note 6 of our accounts, increased from 250 to 292, interest income on loans and advances. And you can also see there that the major drop in interest income line was interest income on treasury bills that dropped from 53.7 to 40.4 billion. Then placement with banks and discount houses. You want to know what was the major reason for the drop. These are transaction-based. So we have one major transaction, two transactions, three transactions, four transactions that have liquidated within the period. And we have found alternative to that instrument by investing it or doing another transaction such as swaps, forward, or other things that is not reporting on this line. So you see a drop in this line. However, if you go to our trading book, you also see growth. So at any point in time, we try to move our investment depending on the market conditions and how it favors us. So I need you to understand. Then you are talking of repricing of the loan book. The market is very, very dynamic. So as the policy and the market environment is favoring or is ripe for us to reprice, yes, we are going to reprice. We are playing in a market, and the market is also competitive. So yes, repricing, we will do it whenever the opportunity comes, and then we'll also match it with all other investment options available. You're talking of our trading gains, the drivers for our trading gains. So if you look at page 143, note 11 of our financial statements, you will see that we had a gain on treasury bills of 127 from 123 last year. Gain on other trading book, we had a gain of 42 billion compared to a loss of 18 billion. And then gain on bonds, a loss of 3 billion compared to a loss of 14 billion. So if you look at the trading book, how it works, it responds to the trading dynamics and volatility, exchange rate movements, not just the current, the expected direction of the exchange rate, volatility in global exchange rate, crude oil prices, inflation, and a lot of things. And because the trading book is always a valuation, when you do your valuation, one instrument could bring gain, another instrument could bring loss, depending on how you projected the direction of various parameters when you were taking those positions. But for us, we have always tried and successfully managed the loss and gains within the trading book, and we are always having growth in that line of income. So when you are taking this kind of position, you try to diversify and try to cover up different directions of the rates. So that's how you need to understand. The tax expense you're talking about, yes, there's increase in our tax expense, and you're also talking about the exemption on treasury bills and government bonds that has elapsed. That is supposed to be effective 2022. The increase in our tax expense is because of some new provisions in the Finance Act that have changed the way we account for exempt income and the way we allocate costs associated with getting those exempt income. You know that now the tax rule is not static. Anytime the new the Finance Act is passed or amended, it changes the tax computation. As for the government bond, the exemption that has expired, yes, 2022 is going to expire. We have assessed the impact. We expect that from 2022 going, our effective tax rate is going to average around 15, 16, 17%, and it would go in that direction. Also, depending on how the Finance Act for next year will be drawn up. Capital gain tax, what we normally get is tax exemption from our interest income on treasury bills and government bonds, not necessarily capital gain tax in our books.
Yes, thanks very much for this call, and thank you for your questions. The two key areas left that we need to respond to has to do with Basel III capital structure. I will tell you that given where we are in terms of the kind of capital we are holding, most of it is Common Equity Tier 1, and which consists almost 96% of our capital structure. So no matter how you are located based on Basel III, we have a significant sum that covers both our capital, common equity capital and Tier 1 requirements. As a rule, as what we have always done as a strategy in our bank, we've always had sufficient buffer to be able to deal with any shock within the environment. If you type out that back to what we retain and our dividend payout, we've consistently retained about 55%, 52% of our earnings, with the dividend payout coming in at about 52% too. But this year is even actually better, because even with what has been forecasted, we are retaining almost 58% of our earnings going back into capital. With that, it gives us sufficient buffer to be able to deal with what is required for Basel III and any capital structure that may be advised by the regulator. So with respect to Basel III implementation and capital structure, we will say that we are very fine with it. You had also talked last year about the asset growth, the quarter growth. It must be noted better macroeconomic performance in the last quarter of the year, of that 2021, and it's something we took advantage of. Also, consistently, our performance in the last quarter has always been superlative, and we've always demonstrated growth in that last quarter. So it's understandable why we have such a significant growth in that period, given the improving environment and the opportunities that were present within that quarter. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I think the other question to be addressed is the CBN 100 for 100. It's one of the funding initiatives of Central Bank that is targeted at supporting, providing long-term single-digit interest rate support for companies in the private sector, 100 companies in the private sector every 100 days. The scheme commenced 1st of November And at that first came, I think CBN disbursed about 28.3 billion naira to most of them largely SMEs and medium-sized companies. The aim of this project from CBN perspective is to boost economic production and productivity, and also support especially industries and companies that have potentials to generate foreign exchange earnings into the market to improve our foreign exchange supply. So we expect that the next round of funding should be happening pretty soon.
Thank you very much, sir.
Next question.
The next questions come from
the forbearance. Let me say that the forbearance is more like a patriotic thing. What we have is a continuation of the 5% dispensation. There's nothing we can do about it because it applies to everyone. But it's expected that should that forbearance come to an end, there will be an uplift in terms of the interest income accruable to bank with respect to existing facilities that have already been booked.
Thank you, sir. The next questions come from Ronak Gadia of EFG Hermes. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Ebenezer and team, for taking the time today and taking my questions. My first couple of questions, I guess, are just a follow-up on the Basel III transition. I'm not sure if you gave a number, but I just would like to know what the capital adequacy ratio for the bank would be under Basel III basis, if you could disclose that. The second question I have is on the outlook for margins. Can you just give a bit of an overview on what you expect will happen in the interest rate markets and how and what impact that will have on your margins this year? And then the third question I have is on your asset quality and cost of risk. And just before we go to that, you mentioned intervention loans. Could you just give us an idea of what exposure you have to the sort of the intervention loans for which the interest rates still remain at around 5%? And following on from that, if I look at your cost of risk, there was a pretty big uptick in the fourth quarter. So maybe if you could just help us understand why that was. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Roland. With respect to Basel III, like Felix earlier mentioned, we have strong buffers in terms of liquidity, in terms of capital. It has been our tradition, typically. So as a result, we are able to, a simulation we've done, we don't see any pressure on both capital and liquidity. And what we've also seen is that this year, in terms of accretion to shareholders' fund, compared to what we've always done this year, out of our earnings, we are retaining 52%. Last year, we retained 52%. So it's expected that as we continue to move on, we expect that we'll continue to be profitable and we continue to maintain, achieve strong numbers. Therefore, we have an opportunity to continue to enhance our capital base. That's one. Two, outlook for the market. I wish there was a crystal ball for me to look into and tell what direction to happen. We can see that there are upheavals, there are hiccups in different aspects, in different perspectives in the market. And we can't tell where the storms will come from. But one thing we know certainly, that should there be storm in the platform, Zenith will walk out of whatsoever. So what we do is typically watching and reading the market intelligently. And one other thing we do is that we continue to build scenarios, we ask a lot of what-if questions. So asking the what-if questions gives us that opportunity to prepare and model certain situations that may not even occur. So should we have a scenario that now fits into what we have modeled, it begins to be a plug and play. But also, I think in terms of looking at the market, one can say that with respect to COVID, I think it seems like we are getting to a place where the vaccine program and rollout is working effectively. And it also seemed to me like we are the global community seem to be getting to herd immunity session. So we can see that there is a bit of relaxation in terms of people congregating, in terms of travel and everything. So these are expected to create positive sentiment for business. However, we are not forgetting the current geopolitical tension that is taking place in Eastern Europe. You see, that has also elevated market risk. We may not be directly impacted, but nobody knows how long this tension will last and whether it will revibrate, how it will revibrate. We saw how it impacted the equities, the global equities and fixed income market. So what we do is we keep upscaling our adversity quotient to deal with any eventuality as it comes. Outlook for interest rates, I think we don't see any difference between what it has been and what it will be so far. We say this on the back of the fact that CBN has sustained the forbearance given to allowable now for loans on intervention loan, which means for as long as that bucket is concerned, interest rate for this year remains 5%. We've also seen that the government securities, averagely now, 1 year government security is, the yield is about 9%. So, no, not up to 9%, that's for OMO, is about 4-6%. Therefore, we expect, our expectation is that interest rate will remain muted and depressed. So it means that we have to now be more ingenious with respect to how we manage our liquidity. And I can tell you, when it comes to treasury management, I think we have the best in class set of people. Our team, I say it without sounding immodest, is the best in the market, which is what translated into a 7% improvement with respect to our interest expense. If you look at the numbers, you see that, yes, interest income increased by a marginal 2%, but net interest income improved by 9% because we were able to achieve a savings on interest expense from 121 billion to 106 billion. So the same set of people are available in the system. That is going to be challenging, it's going to be tough, but we think we'll be able to navigate it. Then asset quality, I will just get with respect to the proportion of our intervention loan to total loan book. Dennis will take will answer that.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to this investors conference. The intervention loan in the books of the bank is about 17% of our total loan books. But having said that, the GMD in his opening remark mentioned that it was a patriotic duty on the part of the bank to be able to contribute, so to speak, to development in the real sector. So we'll continue to monitor our situation in that particular field, but I can assure you that the returns on our total loan books are still very good. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next question is from Ngozi Omudum of Cardinalstone Partners. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. So I have a few questions, so I pledge you to kindly bear with me. First off, I would like to know what drove the surge in impairment charges on loans. When we look at cost of risk on a quarter-on-quarter basis, we saw a 6.9 percentage points increase in Q4. If you could just let us know what drove that spike. Also, when we look at the return on assets and return on equity, if possible to give us insights on the bank's strategy to improve these ratios. And also, based on the CBN's directive for the Race to 200 Billion FX Repatriation Scheme, in the eventuality that FX, there's a halt in FX sales to the banks, has the bank examined possible implications and how does it intend to fund these FX needs? Also, I'd like to know, based on the latest Finance Act, what's the bank's effective rates going forward? The outlook for your regulatory cost burden, when do you think these pressures are likely to ease off? And then, based on your solid performance in this year, given the likely volatility in the macroeconomic space, what do you think would be the bank's performance for full year 2022? And if there will be a strong performance this year, what will be the key catalyst? And then lastly, speaking on your loan book, what percentage of your loans are still enjoying the CBN's forbearance? Thank you.
Thank you, Ngozi. It looks like this is all. I'm sure by the time we answer your questions, we'll have addressed all the questions, but we'll take them, and as we take them, I'll invite my colleagues to join in taking some of the questions. Let me start with the race to 200 billion projects for 3 years. I think to start with, we need to recognize that as a nation, we have to stop living in denial. We have over-relied upon crude proceeds to sustain our export requirements. And if you go back to history, you will recall that Nigeria at some point was the world leading producer of palm oil, groundnut, cocoa, cotton, timber, all of them. The ground that produced those things is still our ground and still very fertile and arable. So what CBN is just saying is, look, enough of this. Let's go back to basics. Let's go back to what this natural endowment, not just exporting things in its raw form, because each export you do in its raw form without value addition, you are creating and sustaining employment in another economy. So I think it's a laudable economic agenda which all will support. Recall, I also said that we build scenarios. Zenith, way back in about 7 years ago, we started having the annual, we call it advocacy and awareness for exports. When we started, we were not imagining that CBN is going to come to RT 200. So CBN coming to RT 200 is like we're already ahead of the market. So should we get to that point when CBN decide not to sell, they implement not selling, we think between now and end of the year, it provides a reasonable length of time for us to fully cultivate and harness the export potentials of this country so that we can generate alternative source of forest to sustain the market. So Zenith is well prepared. We're already ahead. We have a good number of the exporters you have currently in the country, and we have already started conversation in terms of value addition, making sure that they're all eligible and qualified for the rebate that will come with the scheme. Some that will require funding support, of course, we'll be there to support them. So we don't see any huge challenge, or rather, we see it as a good problem for us to acknowledge and work towards achieving it. Outlook for regulatory costs. Well, that again, it's more like you can't do anything about it. It's a sunk cost. And it's dependent upon your size. But we are determined not to be discouraged by it. We will not say because of the fact that we have regulatory costs, we will not grow the business. We will grow the business. The most important thing is that we must ensure that from the balance sheet we carry, we are able to extract reasonable value that will guarantee us very strong and reasonable performance. Performance outlook for 2022. Simply, we'll continue to do what we've always done. We have, if you look at the fees and commissions, we saw about 23% year-on-year growth. That is not about to stop. We commenced retail and digital banking journey about 2-3 years ago. And I can tell you, since we started, when you look at in terms of the retail food, number of accounts we had in the last 3-4 years, when we started 4 years ago, number of retail accounts we had was a little above 4 million accounts. But right now we have over 16 million accounts. Today we are the biggest acquirer in terms of POS. So we will continue to intensify and elevate our digital acquisition to guarantee strong earnings with respect to our fees and commission. Then product development is also a major thing we are doing. That is also giving us insights to new niches that we never thought of, that is not even known to the market. So we'll continue to build very strong strongholds in these areas to ensure that we sustain superior performance. I will invite Mukhtar to take the question on the finance act. And also, I think there's a question on the return on assets and return on equity. I think basically in terms of our plan and strategy to sustain it is about delivering stronger numbers, which we are determined to do. So Mukhtar.
Thank you very much, sir. Ngozi, your questions. So let me start with the question on impairment charge and then the fact that it has elevated in the last quarter. So if you also look at our gross loans, you would realize that our gross loans has also grown significantly in Q4. So the growth in the impairment charge moves in the same direction and almost, the same direction with the growth in the total loan book. So as the loan book is growing, you would realize that the impairment charge is also moving in that same direction. But does that mean a deterioration in your loan book? No. If you look at our impairment charge, significant part of the impairment charge is coming from our stage one and stage two loans. So that is also very important for you to appreciate 77, for you to appreciate where the impairment charge is coming from. So stage two loans is having bulk of the impairment followed by stage one. Stage three loans is also having impairment, but not as significant as the others. So that shows that we don't have necessarily have deterioration, but the risk environment, we all know, is not very settled yet. It still remains somehow elevated. And if you know the culture of Zenith Bank, we are conservative generally. We want to take on as much impairment as we can at the earliest opportunity to account for what how we understand the risk environment. So that is how what has happened on the impairment area. Return on asset, return on equity. So return on asset and return on equity. You realize that our PAT has grown year on year. PAT has grown by 6%. However, if you look at our equity, our total equity has grown by 15%. Our total asset has grown by 11%. So you expect that, yes, it will bring return on assets down. Why do we want to do that? Because we are retaining a lot of our profits to shore up our capital, because we believe that the global operating environment is still volatile. So we need to have enough buffer to be able to withstand the volatility in the global operating environment. How do we want to improve it? By improving our bottom line. As I explained earlier, the top line has grown, bottom line has grown, and this has been consistent within the financial year. And we are going to continue in that trajectory. If tax rates, Finance Act, I explained earlier with the removal of tax exemption from treasury bills and government bonds, we know that our effective tax rate is going to go up to 15% to 20%. Currently, the effective tax rate is around 12%. The Finance Act, the impact of the current Finance Act is what you have seen in our tax numbers. What the Finance Act is going to be for next year, we don't know, but we think that it's not going to be significantly different. And we have modeled different scenarios. And our effective tax rate is going to remain within the boundary of 15 to 20%. I think I've answered all your questions, Ngozi. Thank you.
Okay, next question.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, just a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one on your touchtone phone or on the keypad on your screen. The next question is from Damilola Olupuna of Chapel Hill Denham. Please go ahead.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you very much for having me, and thank you for hosting this conference call today. I have a few questions for the team. First of all, I would just want to get your view on the recent development in the banking sector. Just recently, we saw GTCO, announced that they'll be pursuing an OldCo structure. Stanbic also announced that they'll be setting up a fintech subsidiary. And Access Bank has announced an OldCo structure. In terms of your outlook maybe your strategic outlook going forward? Is pursuing an old co structure in your purview? That's my first question. Then secondly as well, just recently we heard the likes of Flutterwave, you know, raise some funds, you know, at $3 billion valuation. Can you just comment on that, on probably your assessment on that, and how you think, you know, this might affect banking valuations, you know, going forward? I just want to know how much of your loan book growth was FCY driven. And I see that you have loan book forecast of 10%, you know, for 2022. How much of that will be FX driven in 2022? I also observed that, I mean, in the breakdown of your profit segment, your African operations, you know, reported lower profits in 2021. Can you just comment on drivers of the lower profit? And sorry, lastly, I will just want you to, I know you have touched on it before, but I'll just, I mean, to the extent that we might see elevated interest rates, you know, from the developed market, how much of that do you think will affect the interest rate environment over here? And how is the bank better positioned to tackle the elevated interest rate environment in the event that it materializes? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Damilola. I'll take on your question on the view on banking sector, some players going for holdco, some acquiring fintech. I'll put it this way, that we view our perspective differently. We are weighing the options. We don't do things for the cosmetic of doing it. And we'll continue to implement our retail and digital agenda. And where we find it compelling to change the model, of course, we advise the market to change it. But I can assure you that Zenith is not keeping quiet, and we'll remain very pragmatic with the way we view things, the way we review the market and discern opportunities. That's one. Flutterwave valuation at $3 billion. I think we need to understand clearly that the valuation model for fintech is different from the valuation model for banks. For banks, you can look at my valuation from different angles. One, you can take a view of what my market cap is if I'm lifted. So if I'm listed, so that gives you one valuation. You can take a look at historically my performance in terms of my financials before, of course, you start looking, you know, in terms of comparables. However, when you look at the fintech, the model is different. The valuation is based on estimated addressable market share. The valuation is on potential, not on reality. So as a result, we are not putting apple for apple together. So that is what I need to say there. But we are happy for the Flutterwave team because it's good publicity, it's good advertisement for the country to see that our younger brothers and sisters are coming up with innovation and they are able to attract funding from the international market. We commend them, and in any way we can support them to blossom and get better, we will do that. Loan book growth, FCY, is very insignificant. What you see as a loan book growth of 21%, the FCY content is 2.75. That is because we are conscious in terms of our FCY exposure. Bearing in mind, too, that there is a regulation that forbids us from doing FCY loan for an obligor who doesn't have corresponding FCY cash flow. So what you see majorly in our FCY loan book relates to legacy transactions that have always been there. And the bulk of it is in the oil and gas sector. And in a way, the rally in the price of crude, once they address the weak evacuation infrastructure and deal with other associated risk in the production environment, we expect that segment should do better. Interest rate outlook with respect to what is happening, the inflation that is up globally, I think for us, we need to understand that it's a margin business. It's a margin game. So if for any reason, in terms of my FCY takings, if there's any increase, if it's not something I can bear, and if it's going to impact my margin, of course, I need to do a repricing. And mark you, it's not a straight through process. It's a combination of funding needs. There are some funding, you look at what the impact increase in the portfolio. If it's not significant, we are prepared to absorb it, provided it's not causing a spike for us in terms of our margins. So that's the way to look at it, that it's not typically every cost that will be passing on to our customers, except it becomes reasonably high. Profit margin from African operations, I think what you have there, the drop there is from Ghana. There was a bit of drop in Ghana, and that is coming from mark-to-market adjustment for their derivative book.
Thank you very much, sir. The next question is from Samuel Oshingua of Cardinalstone Partners. Please go ahead.
Good evening. This is Samuel Oshingua from Cardinalstone Research. Just a few questions. Firstly, the bank recorded a 10 billion valuation gain in Q4 alone, which we believe outpaced the quarterly run rate of 5 billion naira. Prior 9 months report, which showed the cumulative of 15 billion. Could you provide some clarity on why on this hike in number? Secondly, we'd like to know what possible drivers there were for upticks in account maintenance fees and also fees on your e-products, your electronic products, that led to the movement in your fees and commission income. Also, could you just give some qualitative insight on what drove that and catalyst? And thirdly, on your Basel III concerns, could you give us explicit numbers for your computed CET1 ratios, Tier 1 ratios, and your capital adequacy ratios? Thank you.
All right, thank you very much, Samuel. Revaluation gain you notice in Q4 is just a reflection of the exchange rate movement. If you notice on the last working day of the year, there was a movement in exchange rate where it closed, I think it was 435 or average of 424. So that explains it. But however, in the course of the year up to the 9 months, like you recorded, there was a bit of moderation in terms of exchange rate movement. Drivers in account maintenance and our digital income and fees is simply growth in market share. That's all. In terms of the ratio for CTI, Felisegmo, you want to address that?
Yes, just to let you know that in terms of CET1 requirement plus tier one, it comes to about 11.25% required. But the bank as at the last computation, is about 19.03%, which gives us sufficient buffer to be able to hold any shock within the environment. So our capital is mainly common equity and gives us sufficient room to be able to deal with any environmental shocks.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one. Our next question is from Toyosi Oni of Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you very much for hosting this call. So I just have a couple of industry-wide questions first, before I go on to more specific questions for Zenith Bank. So firstly, I just wanted to get a sense of what oil price at well over $100 means for Zenith, particularly related to asset quality and the portion of your income that is linked to FX. What does this mean for swaps, given the possibility of stronger reserves for the country? My second question is on Basel III. The pilot period is almost over, and I just wanted to get a sense of what the regulator's posture is for the possibility of full transition. So for the specific questions, my first, I just wanted to comment that from Q1 to Q2, the third quarter, we saw flattish growth both year on year and quarter on quarter. And then in Q4, there was this big 54% jump. And I just wanted to dig into it a little bit. And I guess I'll just start with the trading income side of things. So you said that this was driven by the positioning of your trading book, given changes and volatility. I just wanted to ask if you could give some more specific details or more granularity around this, just so we understand. Because, I mean, we didn't see any material operational difference in 4Q. So in the case that we're missing something, I would appreciate if management could highlight some of these opportunities that you took advantage of to us. My second question is, in the report, there's, you know, the table that shows the summation of the balance sheet according to currencies. I think that's page 109. If we compute the totals manually, on your dollar portion, it seems that there is a short position of 105 billion, which is about $248 million if we convert it using the exchange rate you used at the end of the year. I was just trying to reconcile this better to the 26 billion revaluation gains that Zenith booked as at the end of the year. My next question is on asset quality. So based on your presentation, restructured oil and gas loans represent 15% of gross loans. I just wanted to ask, what kind of loans are this and which IFRS bucket does this sit in? And also, I guess, what does the higher oil price mean for these kind of loans? And just sticking to asset quality, we saw a significant chunk of stage 3 move to stage 2. And I just wanted more clarity around the reclassifications that we saw in the book during the year. And I guess layering on that, is 2% a normalized cost of risk for Zenith in a high loan growth environment? My last question is on agency banking, and I just wanted to gauge what the competitive dynamics are here. So in the last quarter of last year, MTN and Airtel received AIP for their PSB licenses, which means essentially we're going to be seeing a lot more agents coming into the market, especially in the hinterlands that the banks have not necessarily penetrated. I just wanted to ask, given the fact that Zenith ramped up its agents significantly during the year, how are you positioning for this new competition? And in the long run, what would you like? What is your strategy with regards to agency banking? Thank you very much.
Tiwasi, thank you very much. This is a plethora of questions, but we'll take them one after the other. I think I'll start with PSB. Put it this way, the more the merrier. It's not just about PSB. What we need to recognize is that in the financial system, the traditional competitive landscape has changed. We have seen fintech coming. We have seen the PSB, but the fact remains that we approach it from the principles of two C's, collaborate, compete. It depends on what you bring before us. So we are not, in a way, competition brings out the best in us. So we like the fact that we have new entrants, which means we are not going to stay in our cocoon thinking that we'll build an empire. No. So it provides inspiration for us to drive product development, which equally takes me to your question on what happened, the Q3, Q4, what happened. You see, you need to understand the Zenith. If you look at historically our performance, there is a pattern of performance in Zenith that Q4 is our strongest quarter ever. Q4 is the strongest quarter. I haven't seen any exception since my 21, going to 22 years of working in Zenith. There's a reason behind it. There's a force. There's a power. There's a conviction behind it that nobody can stop it. Not even me, the CEO. There's a burst of energy that everybody wants to exert to close well. So that will continue to happen. You talked about oil price at above 100, what it means for us. I'll say, not just for us, let's look at it beyond Zenith. if you look at it beyond Zenith, is bittersweet. Bitter in the sense that the sweet part of it is that, yes, the exposures I have, the obligors I have will not generate incremental revenue with respect to where the oil price is. And again, what we've been doing over the years is encouraging every one of them, because part of the biggest impediments they had was that most of them have production shutting because of weak evacuation infrastructure. Practically every one of them is moving to alternative evacuation route, which will be launched wholly in the course of this year, which now guarantees that there will be at least 80% evacuation of whatever is produced from the wells. So with oil price at 80, of course, at above 100, $100 per barrel against $60 per barrel, you can translate it. It means incremental revenue. But however, we are not rejoicing about it, because for the country as a whole, we have subsidy payment. It's going to push up subsidy payment. It's going to push up subsidy payment. So we worry about that and implication for government spending. Of course, that's a fiscal issue. It's not within our control. But these are the things. But if you're asking how it impacts us, well too, because we've also seen the price moving up. We have also gone back to the obligors who have had to rehedge. So if you have rehedged with a downside protection of, say, $65 per barrel when price was 80, we are now tactically being mindful of the cost of premium, getting them to move up and provide a higher protection for the downside at 75-80. So if we have that, it means that reasonably for the rest of the year, we'll be able to guarantee some level of revenue that could accelerate repayment of the dollar exposure beyond what has been already programmed for repayment this year. You talked about the short position, that there's a dollar short position. No, that's not true. I'll get Mukhtar to refer you to the relevant pages of the financials to explain that. Basel III, we've taken it. Felix will go through it again. And with respect to how the market is seeing it, maybe the implication for the economy. So, Felix, you want to take that? Then, okay, I think I've addressed PSB license, asset quality restructured loan. Maybe, Henry, you can just throw some light on that.
Okay. Toyosi, thank you very much. With respect to the Basel III, I'll provide a response. Just to say that the regulators have come back to us on the values they have seen. I guess they are still looking at what the banks are printing out. We've submitted about three positions to date. We're putting up the February numbers. It's likely to end in April, which makes it 6 months for the review. But I would say, like we have said earlier, that all the parameters, liquidity and funding, capital and leverage, and all the parameters required for Basel III, we are strong, we in them, and we leave sufficient buffer. And in rounding up, I would just say that for a retention of 58% this year of our retained earnings, we expect to have a very robust position to support our growth forecast in 2022. We really do not have issues with what regulators will come with. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much to see your question on the FX balance sheet on page 108. After checking the tables and calculating the totals, you should have also been kind enough to look at the notes that we provided beneath that says that we have swap transactions, that we have dollars of certain amounts that are deliverable to us on maturity. Those dollars are currently represented by Naira assets that we are holding. So we have future Naira liability that we are going to swap with a future Naira asset. You value both your assets and the liability that you are going to have. And when you do all those valuation, you know, for derivatives, the nominal amount of a derivative does not sit on your balance sheet. So when you do all those valuation, you are going to have a proper long position. And you also have to know, it cannot be that it's a mistake that consistently we have a long dollar position. And anytime there is revaluation, anytime there is exchange rate movement, we end up with revaluation gain. So if you look at this, you could also look at the other notes that talks more about our notional amount of our derivative transaction on page 149. So if you look at page 149, you will see that the notional amount of all our derivative instruments is about $3.2 billion. So when you read that with what you are seeing in the FX balance sheet and what you are seeing as the fair value of our derivative asset and liability, you would have a proper understanding of how our long position or how our revaluation gain works. You can check page 149. Then you are also talking about our trading income, the nitty-gritty of trading income. Unfortunately, this forum alone cannot exhaust the nitty-gritty because I mentioned earlier, trading income is based on valuation. And when you are going to value, I think the MD took us through the basics of valuing fintech. And when you are going to value instrument, there are so many factors. The exchange rate, the interest rate, current, the forecasted exchange rate, the forecasted interest rate, the interest rate, what you forecasted at the time you were doing the transaction compared to what you are forecasting now at the reporting date. So that is what goes into valuation. And when you do that, we have consistently, sometimes you see a line becoming loss, another time you see it becoming gain, which is typical of trading book. I hope that is clear.
Okay, thank you, Mukhtar. Henry?
Yeah, thank you so very much. You said 15% cumulative restructured loans belonging to oil and gas. These are all substantially for brownfield producing assets with considerable reserves. So these are assets that have high reserves and are doing very, very well. Now that those restructuring was on the back of COVID issues and issues of the industry-wide line losses. But with most of these oil companies investing in alternative evacuation routes, that is about 2 meters down deep under the ground, we expect those line losses issues to be resolved. And like it has been noted, with oil prices at 100, we expect that this oil company will do much, much better. And COVID issues behind us, so 2022 and beyond, we expect these companies to perform and improve in their performance. And in terms of buckets, most of the oil and gas loans still remain in bucket one and bucket two because they are really doing well. Most of them have their interest paid up to date, so they stay in bucket one and bucket two. But we expect a positive outlook for the industry and for those names going forward. Thank you.
Okay. Next question.
Thank you, sir. The next question is from Damilola Olopona of Chapel Hill Denham. Please go ahead.
All right. Thank you very much for having me again. I just want to ask for that question. One, I would like to find out what are the key sectors, you know, driving your loan book expansion, you know, in 2021, and 2022, and if you can also shed some light on the key sectors where you increase your exposure in 2021. So my questions have been answered from the previous question, but I also want to find out, please, can you comment on the status of the special bills issued by the CBN? And, what's the outlook going forward? When will they mature? I understand that they've been rolled over a couple of times, but can you just comment and just shed light on the rate you are currently holding them, and what the outlook for that particular investment security would be. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Damilola.
The first question is on the drivers of the loan growth and expectation for drivers of the loan book in the current year. I think we'll say generally is you look at it and see that with the GDP growing by over 3%, far above the projection, World Bank projection for Nigeria, it gives indication that the economy is recovering steadily from the COVID pandemic. And what we see is that it cuts across different sectors. We are seeing manufacturing companies also enhancing and expanding capacity. We've seen FMCGs an upsurge in terms of their sales volume. I would say it cuts across different sectors. The only sector you probably will not see is oil and gas, which remains very muted for us. It's for obvious reason because there are fundamental challenges that need to be addressed, especially with respect to evacuation infrastructure. And once the evacuation infrastructure is dealt with, again, there is also another positive coming from the signing of the Petroleum Industry Act, which has also provided more clarity and remove doubt with respect to how the industry is going to operate going forward. So we expect that growth will come across all sectors. That's what to say. Status of special bills. First is that they come into, initially when CBN started, they were all in one tenor bucket, but it's now been changed where the tenor bucket ranges between 90 and 180 days, and it still remains at 0.5%. So as we can't give an outlook as what happened because it's essentially a CBN play. So whatever the regulators want to do, we'll do. But there's also opportunity for us to trade. And we capitalize on that to carry out some trading opportunities and enhance our yield on the instruments. Next question.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, just a reminder, to if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one. Sorry, our next question. My apologies. Our next question is from Tunde Ogunleye of SBG Securities. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity again. I'm so sorry some of the questions have been, if this question has been answered, because I have some network issues. So the question is particularly related to your e-banking. So I wanted to know your thoughts about the telco's PSD license and the adoption of the eNaira, how this is going to affect the e-banking revenue and also your deposit structure. The next question is on your agency banking. So probably if you could shed more light on your total number of agents. And also just to confirm, what percentage of these agents is owned by the, are these agents fully owned by the bank? So it would probably be nice for you to probably give like a percentage that is owned by the bank, or probably more of a partnership with the telcos. And the final question is on the take rate, just to understand like what are the take rates on your agency banking transactions? I think that'll be all for me. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Today we seem to have lost the last question, but let's start from the e-banking, agency banking, whether the agents are owned by us. I invite Tokbe to answer the questions.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you again. I think on the e-Naira, my group MD already spoke about that in his introductory remarks. On agency banking, let me say that we specifically developed that to take advantage of technology, you know, to push our retail business down to the unbanked. And I can say that we've done, you know, quite well. Agents we have now is about 76,000, and they're growing. And we continue to innovate with a bid to drive further the market share in that regard. Yes, it's getting very competitive. But like we said, we're innovative and we're, you know, we're doing a lot with the agents. When you look at cards, we're the only bank now issuing cards, you know, through the agents. And we're doing a lot, you know, more across the sectors. We're looking at local governments across the country to ensure that we have presence, you know, everywhere. So 76,000 and growing, and then driving the adoption of customers using technology. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Next question.
Thank you, sir. Then the last question is from Austin Ogana of the Will newspaper. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for having me. My name is Austin Ogana, and I work for the Will newspaper. I have two questions, or rather three questions. The first one would be wanting to know if you have any, if your bank has any expansion plans within the continent or even globally. And the second question will be if you see any other areas in our economy where the bank will grant loans and facilities to customers. And third question will have to be on possible headwinds apart from COVID that that appears to have been tamed. Do you see any other headwinds against profitability for the bank this year? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Austin. The first question on expansion plan. Let me put it this way. We have a growth agenda. And this growth agenda currently is being fired organically. That by no means does not mean that if we find any opportunity for an acquisition, we will not do so. But we still remain very, very disciplined with the way we look at such things, that whatever acquisition we are going to do must add value to the process. It must not take value out of us. That's one. So in other words, I'll say we are open. If in case you find any opportunity, bounce it on us. Areas in our economy where we can do lending. See, we need to appreciate and also commend the central bank for promoting the digital payment system. That is helping, not just the digital payment system, the introduction of the biometric identification that has now helped us to tame and deal with the challenge of identity in the bank. So you know that if you have a bank account, for that account to be effective, it must be validated with your BVN. And apart from the initiation of this BVN, you also have the global standing order instruction, which every lender from banks in the economy are now mandated to execute. What that global standing order instruction seeks to achieve is that should you have a default in your loan in Zenith, Zenith can trigger a global standing order instruction on all your bank accounts in the country, such that if you owe me 10 million and you are trying to run away, once I trigger it and it's driven by your BVN, once I trigger it electronically, the system will hunt you within the banking system. If it finds that you have 12 million in another bank, it simply electronically sweeps 10 million to me and leaves 2 million to you. However, even when we trigger the BVN or the global system, the GSI, you don't have money. You are blacklisted. Your BVN is blacklisted. You are not able to operate the bank account. So what this has done is that it has provided greater impetus for banks to now consider lending to the retail sector, who normally come for between 5 to 20 million naira unsecured. So we are riding on this to extend our footprints in terms of credit extension to different segments of the economy. We are also taking particular interest in supporting SMEs, because SMEs are the bedrock of the economy. For us, we see the SME as a grooming ground where we are looking at it to identify SMEs with potential. We'll provide them with the necessary funding support and also advisory services free of charge so that we can mentor them to become champions of tomorrow. Then the other area where we see opportunities will come for incremental lending is coming from the export drive that the CBN has also commenced with the introduction of the raise to 200 billion in 3 years. So CBN has now made it very compelling for practically every bank to begin to look at that space. And let me say that that space is big. It can accommodate as many as are interested in lending to that space. So as the economy continues to also pick up, we see that we can see in some cities, we can see the convergence in the demography where the rural locations are now almost infusing into the urban system. And that is also promoting a lot of spend and a lot of retail spend, a lot of consumption. So once we see along the value chain of the different sector, there will be opportunities to extend loan. Possible headwinds. You see, the thing is that what will constitute big volatility is hardly ever known. Nobody, there's no Nostradamus that can tell you we saw COVID coming, therefore we prepare for it. Again, there's no Nostradamus that can tell us we saw what we are seeing in Eastern Europe coming, and we can say, what to do is about how prepared we are. And again, for Zenith, we have a culture of really, really building high adversity quotient, such that when we face adversity, we don't get discouraged. When we face adversity, we are in a position to navigate. And apart from facing adversity, different models that we build, if it doesn't fit into a particular scenario we build, maybe it will fall in between. So it's quite easy for us to navigate. And all we also do is intelligently read the market. We intelligently read the market, and where we don't find comfort in doing anything, we are prepared not to take any risk at all. So we will remain very calculated and making sure that we position the institution to continue to navigate headway. That's what we've been trained to do. That's the culture of Zenith, and we'll sustain it.
Thank you very much, sir. Then we have no further questions in the queue, sir, and would you like to make some closing comments?
Okay, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for the opportunity for us to provide deeper insights with respect to the facts behind our figures. And we thank you most sincerely for the interest you've shown, you continue to show in Zenith, and thank you for your very insightful questions. And I'd like to assure you that going into the future, we'll continue to elevate our digital banking campaign, and we'll also continue to be pragmatic and innovative as we move into other aspects of the economy, looking for new opportunities, and we'll continue to create new niche opportunities, develop minimum viable product, and see that we grow new revenue pools and verticals. We have a very ubiquitous banking platform that provides that leverage for us to connect with customer at any segment of the economy. Even if you are the last mile in the retail economy, we have a platform to connect with you. We can connect with you through the mobile phone, through the USSD, through the web, through the internet. We can connect with you through physical presence. We can connect with you through our agents, agency banking. So we'll continue to maintain that discipline, and we'll continue to be smart and agile as we review the opportunities arising in the economic environment. So thank you very much, and I wish to assure you that all said, Zenith will continue to deliver very strong numbers. And given the kind of resources we have, the kind of talent we have here, the doggedness of the team, the resilience, the commitment, and the innovative capability, and also added to the very superior guidance and advice we get from the board, it will amount to negligence for a Zenith to fail. So we wish to assure the market that notwithstanding the hiccups and the struggles in the market, we'll keep our shoulder and head high. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that then concludes today's conference call, and you may now disconnect.